All right, this is going to be an interesting multidisciplinary exercise. So briefly, I want to cover the differences between egalitarianism, traditional values, and Marxism, and more specifically where these overlap and or can be transformed into one another. So the essential problem with egalitarianism is that it takes merit and then turns the volume all the way to 11. And I think the best way to show the problem here is to take some examples and compare egalitarianism to traditional values. So more traditional values would recognize that there are limits to merit, and this is why things like voluntary charities are formed under more traditional cultures. So let's take two examples to demonstrate. Let's take a case of someone who is irresponsible with their money, and this individual begins to suffer as a result. Both egalitarianism and traditional values would be in agreement about allowing the suffering because the action was not meritable, and the natural punishment as a result is the best teacher. Let's take a separate case now, where someone is born with a defective heart valve, and this defect is causing great problems for this individual, and this condition is through no fault of their own. Egalitarianism, in its full, complete form, would fail at handling this correctly, because it would try to quantify if it should be engaging or disengaging. And this attempt at quantification is the same failure that Keynesian economists make when they try to quantify the economy. More traditional values, however, would look at this and realize that the suffering was through no fault of their own, and if a voluntary charity were set up, then individuals with excess surplus could simply donate to help their fellow man out of sheer civility. Do keep in mind that for this exercise, we're imagining a culture that's on solvent money, where everyone isn't drowning in debt, as history has shown that when people have surpluses, they are more generous. So while a traditional system here would work, an egalitarian system would not. And to add weight to this, an egalitarian model would begin with no default biases for any individual, whereas a traditional model would begin with default biases for any individual. Now, in my estimation, the default biases in a traditional model are there for the express purposes of maintaining efficiency, and efficiency is an extension of what is. So, for example, if we take female nature, we know female nature is volatile, and we know that this volatility is likely to undercut efficiency. Thus, under a system of traditional values, there is a default bias for excluding women because of the efficiency concerns, which are born from the volatility of most women, which is a direct extension of their biology. Thus, a default bias makes sense because it recognizes what is and adjusts for it in favor of efficiency. That is, there can be a default bias of excluding women for efficiency reasons, not ideological ones. However, for the efficiency argument to hold, it must actually hold. And before I continue, I do want to insert an anecdote here that I believe the reasons men have stumbled historically and in the present when discussing this topic because they attempt to resist an ideological argument with another ideological argument, when in reality you can resist an ideological argument with an efficiency argument or a biological argument. For example, with the Declaration of Sentiments in the 1800s, which might be best described as early feminist dogma, there were a handful of men which signed it, and many of the arguments seem hairy from an ideological perspective to attempt to counter one by one. However, once you begin looking at these statements through the lens of efficiency, it becomes much easier to determine which ones should be rejected and why. So I did want to put it out there that countering ideological arguments with efficiency arguments seems to be effective in clarifying with no ideology of our own necessary. Now, itemizing some efficiency arguments. This isn't meant to be comprehensive, but includes some examples. If a woman were loud and obnoxious and using you as an emotional tampon frequently, you may determine that this is an inefficient use of your time and reject the inclusion of women like this into your life simply because it undercuts the efficiency of your thought processes. Similarly, under current law, where a woman can point at a man and say he did it, it would be very easy to exclude women from your life on the basis of your financial efficiency being undercut both now and in the future. And there could of course be a number of variables therein, including but not limited to any real losses that you incurred plus any opportunities that you would lose in the future. Thus, the hyper-exclusionary tendencies of MGTOW at this stage make sense. However, there are instances where the efficiency argument breaks down, and the rationale for exclusion goes with it. A good example of this would be the MGTOW mirror that we're working on, where the inclusion of a few select females drew some ire to say the least. So let's analyze this from an efficiency perspective, since exclusion is based on an efficiency argument. First, there is no legal risk involved, thus inclusion does not undercut my financial efficiency either now or in the future. Further, the candidates that were included have a multi-year track record of non-volatility when acting in our space, and that includes non-volatility of the subject matter and non-volatility of their interactions with us. So I cannot even claim that the efficiency of the message is being undercut by volatility when they are consistently on point. Thus, the default bias is overcome and the reason for exclusion is voided. Quite literally, the only remaining argument that I would have for exclusion is because woman. And if that is the only argument I have, and I cannot construct one that is anchored in efficiency, all that would leave me with as an excuse is blind dogma, class warfare, or essentially Marxism. Or put another way, it doesn't matter if you're efficient or not, you will be rejected because class. And this is where traditional values can slip into Marxism. So, to simplify, you can have a default bias, which is born out of the realities of biology, which extends itself into an argument of efficiency, but your argument of efficiency must hold. And if you cannot provide a valid efficiency argument, then the only remaining rationale that I could see for continued exclusion at that stage would be Marxian or Marxist in nature. I wanted to qualify this because it lays a foundation for the rest of this video, as well as it pushes back on charges that I have egalitarian tendencies. The default bias that I have in favor of exclusion negates the idea that I'm operating in an egalitarian way. Or put another way, because egalitarianism recognizes merit and egalitarianism is defective, does not mean that all things which recognize merit are egalitarian. And further, I thought it was important to qualify where traditional values reach their limit as far as their default bias, because once we're beyond that threshold, it can transform itself into Marxism. And further, emphasis added, exclusion is based on efficiency, not ideology. Okay, I don't want to be false or sugar-coated about this. We have problems, and I'm going to attempt to concretely qualify them. Now, there is a prior video I released titled Why I Challenge MGTOW. And the short version is, it's better to apply rigor internally and fix our problems internally than it is to have someone from the outside come in and eat our lunch. Further, we shouldn't want to find ourselves on the wrong side of history because we couldn't be bothered to see how something could go wrong moving forward. So sometimes what I am met with in my comments is the assertion that nobody has the right to come in and redefine MGTOW. It has certain parameters, and if anybody attempts to adjust those parameters, they're creating something new which is not MGTOW. And I, by and large, agree with this statement. However, the charge of the comments is usually of the mind that I am the person who's trying to redefine MGTOW. And the reality is, we've already had people come in and redefine it for us. And if I were to follow these charges concretely, this redefinition that was made for us has resulted in something that is not MGTOW. And in fact, the primary effort of applying the rigor here will be to unredefine it. So, we have to go over the old narrative, the new narrative, what changes were made, who had a hand in making those changes, and if sufficient rigor was applied to justify those changes. Now, to do this, we have to time travel. MGTOW was created by two men who go by the identities of Ragnar and Solaris. Both of these men were or are married. So before we continue, you should allow that fact to register for a moment, as I think that alone forces the recognition that something changed at some point. Somebody moved something. Now, Solaris found me, and at first I had no idea who he was. After speaking with him, I quickly realized that he was intelligent, but that's essentially all I knew. I was preoccupied with slaying feminazis, and didn't think too much of it. In hindsight, it makes sense that they would have found me, and I will qualify that in a moment. But I think the more important part here is that Solaris sent me the link to the original manifesto that he helped to author, and he asked me to back it up as part of our project, which I have in fact done. So this comes as close to an authoritative definition as you can get. I will put the link to the full version that he sent me in the low bar if the archive site is still live, but for the thrust of this video, I will only go through the pertinent parts. Now, the manifesto does include history of how it was founded and why. I am now quoting. MGTOW began as a result of XYZ, a very popular men's rights or MRA forum being erased three separate times from 2000 to 2003. Some of the members were weary of having a resource created, populated with information and links that other people could use, and then having that resource destroyed over and over. This site has now abandoned all MRA content, and links to the MRA content, internal and external, on the current version of the site are all dead. Several people who were members of the XYZ forum created a secret forum and recruited members from other forums to their new anonymous location. Several of them set up a time for a meeting, and two showed up at a bar in 2003. They sampled many of the fine ales and lagers and created the idea of a decentralized, non-political movement that would support men and their choices in the face of widespread scorn, indifference, and hostility. The next day, they met at a hotel suite and fleshed out the idea some more, sketched a logo and a framework of sorts. Since it began as a decentralized organization, quotes, it has no leader, no official message board, and no website. There is no there to organize, attack, censor, eliminate, or shame into submission. Now, something I find interesting about this is MGTOW itself was born out of repeated censorship. So when content authors act shocked and horrified about censorship on places like YouTube, it's almost worthy of a good head shaking. So, moving forward to the stated goals of MGTOW. Quote, this goal is to take away everyone's right to vote on other people's affairs, thus rendering it impossible for political organisms and ideologies to impose their personal will on everyone else. It is not about reinstalling patriarchy or revoking female voting rights or making socialism illegal. It might have this as a side effect, but not directly and not as a political ideology. Only the future will show what happens, and by going our own way, we are preparing men and boys for that future. End quote. So let me just go ahead and concretely state that anyone that isn't on board with that goal had no right to move or redefine it, especially without precedent, and I will be getting to that. Now, it continues, three prime strategies for achieving the aforementioned goal, instilling masculinity in men, and it gives recommendations, instilling femininity in women, and it goes on to further qualify, quote, we will hold women equally accountable to men and ignore and shun those who refuse to take any responsibility for their own circumstances. Thus, we induce women to take a complementary position with men instead of a competitive position, as is now the case. End quote. Now, I'm going to be to the point. This is the position that women have played through the whole of human history, at least in the functional stages of civilization. This is perfectly in line with precedent, and anyone agitating for change away from this precedent needs to provide something more solid than utopian pipe dreams, especially ones that have not undergone any rigorous testing to determine the long-term consequences. And the third strategy is to limit government, to reduce its influence in our daily lives, and one of the recommendations that it points out is reduction in tax paying, and I will be coming back to that shortly. So just reading a small piece from the second strategy, we will hold women equally accountable to men and ignore and shun those who refuse to take any responsibility for their own circumstances. It would appear to me that the present version of MGTOW by and large has been reduced to a fraction of that single sentence. Essentially, the entire definition became ignore and shun women. No additional qualifiers necessary, and never mind the rest of it. So the next question is, how did we get moved off this plot? In my estimation, we've had pillars of the community shift us off the plot, and I have yet to hear sufficient logic backed up by precedent from any of them. Because logic without precedent allows you to build staircases to anywhere. And one of the underlying problems I think we're faced with is that men have a tendency to want to be inclusive to other men, and a tendency to want to avoid the rigor because they don't want to start a civil war. But if our approach is being inclusive without regard for merit, what does that kind of thinking remind you of? There is one pillar of the community that leaps to mind, and normally I wouldn't single out any one person, but he's essentially thrown down the gauntlet in regard to being challenged on this, and he no longer participates very much anyway, at least not on YouTube, so I think it's time to apply the rigor to his assertions. So, Barbarossa has videos up, and I think they're still available. Many of them are several years old. One of the videos in particular tells men to know the type of lifestyle that they're getting into. And in this video, he refers to women as the enemy, and refers to any unnecessary engagement with them as fraternizing with the enemy. I consider this to be a problem because it's straight out Marxism, but more than that, he gained almost mythic status in his absence, and I haven't heard much, if any, pushback on this, as it seemed to be accepted as blind dogma. Further, after a disappearance, he contradicted himself when he returned with a girlfriend. He provided no reconciling logic for this. He didn't provide much in the term of qualifiers for adjustment of position, and if challenged, he said he would simply ignore the comment, remove the comment, or simply block you. Now, at this point, I'm asking if this is what passes for rigor. Because in response to this, I did not see anybody go back and analyze his content for which parts were right or which parts were wrong. In fact, most of the response I saw was that Barbarossa wasn't hard enough, and we can hate women harder and longer than he can. I'm going to make the assertion that this is sloppy, to say the very least. He also dismissed the idea of small/limited government, stating that one had never existed, which is abjectly false. The United States existed as small/limited government from the time period of 1776 to 1913. He didn't see the government as being responsible for many of the problems that men face. Again, this is abjectly false because the government is the one who strapped Gatling guns to female hypergamy. Further, it fails to recognize the cycles of government or the local knowledge problem, which even the socialists acknowledged as a legitimate problem and stated that only decentralized socialism could work. I believe there's a quote from Jefferson here that qualifies this concretely. Quote, "A departure from principle becomes a precedent for a second, that second for a third, and so on, till the bulk of society is reduced to mere automatons of misery, to have no sensibilities left but for sinning and suffering, and the forehorse of this frightful team is public debt. Taxation follows that, and in its train, wretchedness and oppression." End quote. And it was understood that the restraining force on government, keeping it limited, was a precious metal standard, because you simply cannot print gold to finance your own ideals. This is why, when the United States went off the gold standard in the 1970s, the National Organization for Women was funded shortly after. And I think James Madison hit the nail on the head when he said, "To compel a man to subsidize with his taxes the propagation of ideas which he disbelieves and abhors is sinful and tyrannical." Or perhaps Thomas Paine will do it for you. Quote, "What at first was plunder assumed the softer name of revenue," end quote. Or maybe the more succinct version would be Samuel Adams, quote, "The power to tax is the power to destroy," end quote. So allow me to be unequivocally direct in my blaspheme. Barbarossa was wrong to have a hand in moving MGTOW off the plot. His position was one of statism, which is 180 degrees from precedent, and it is exactly that kind of statism which has allowed the government into the affairs of private individuals. This is the kind of statism that gave feminism teeth and strapped very dangerous weapons to female hypergamy. In absence of this kind of statism, female nature would be like a demon core hit with a carbon rod. The radioactive flash would fall off exponentially and only reach the distance of about one room. But when you allow something like the government to refine that weapon, you give it the power to level entire nations. Thus, the focus on limited government in the original manifesto should have never been rejected, and this is in combination with the fact that he never had the right to move the definition in the first place. Further, he was of the mind that the way forward with government was to try and change it from within. Now, this strikes me as peculiar because this is very much an MRA-styled argument. The prime difference between MGTOW and MRA is that MRA seeks to change an oversized government, and MGTOW seeks to massively reduce an oversized government. Thus, the definition of MGTOW never had anything to do with the inclusion of or exclusion of women, at least beyond excluding the ones who failed to take responsibility for their own circumstances. Further, this narrowing of scope to be essentially defined by exclusion of women and nothing else has led to numerous secondary problems and fracturing. For example, the purple pill was established to allow men with knowledge of female nature to deal with women, either for dating or marriage, and it was established on the premise that MGTOW by definition forbids inclusion of women at any level, a thought which is readily proven false, given that the founders of MGTOW were both married. Thus, there would be no need for the purple pill, provided that they are shunning bad female behavior, helping other men to be masculine, and doing what they can to prevent from feeding the state. And even though it was meant to describe the lifespan of a government, the quote from Jefferson is coming to mind again, how a departure from principle becomes a precedent for a second, that second for a third, and so on. And this is why I have arrived at the idea that deviation from the manifesto has led to the beginning of incoherency. And I should qualify that adherence to the manifesto is not one of blind dogma, because it is essentially adherence to precedent, no ideology required. And to quickly run through a list of additional problems and fracturing, defining it by the inclusion of or the exclusion of women has essentially transformed the definition of MGTOW into something that is gynocentric, where it gets its frame of reference and identity in relation to women. This is a backwardization because it is women who get their sense of identity in relation to men. And I've said before that putting all of one's thoughts toward women in either a positive or negative way is still putting your thoughts in the orbit of women. And the only way to be truly free of gynocentrism is to be female neutral. Further, when we define it by the exclusion of women solely, for instance, fraternizing with the enemy, we essentially begin defining it by complete Marxism. No efficiency argument required, and context is irrelevant. Another problem is the cult-like tendencies that begin to form, as men begin to feel guilty for being unable to reach the so-called monk level. And here again, even abstinence is gaining identity by using women as a reference point. Further, at this narrowed scope of simply shun women, it begins to contradict itself when people reverse this and say, well, you can have a girlfriend, though. And the way they escape this contradiction is to add qualifiers, for example, well, as long as you don't marry or cohabitate. And with this narrowed scope and without these qualifiers, any definition of MGTOW would evaporate entirely. And these qualifiers added barely keep it from evaporating, but here we still run into problems. The problem with just doing your own thing and not reminding people of the original roots while simultaneously ignoring things like tax paying is that first you allow the definition to shift to being defined by these tactics, and once things like tax paying are no longer a part of the focus, you undercut efforts such as my own where I've been starving feminist social workers in my family. Your tax paying funds those grants, which finance our paychecks. In reality, you would be better to give all of your money to one terrible woman than to pay taxes, because when you pay taxes, you're financing many terrible women, and at least the damage would be contained in the former case. So if anyone here really wants to have a witch hunt on who's real MGTOW and who's not, you should be finding out who's still holding up the state with tax money. Because who's getting their dick wet does not matter in relation to the definition. And truth be told, we should probably be a community of tax specialists at this point. But never mind that elephant under the rug, because it's easier to get a thumbs up if you talk about bad female nature than it is to talk about how you're undercutting my efforts when you finance the feminazis I just got through starving. And finally, if we accept narrow scope such as this, what you're actually doing is putting an expiration date on MGTOW. If taken to the absolute in present form, there are a number of possibilities where MGTOW self-terminates. For instance, the population collapses to zero, or it only lasts until the government collapses, or it goes straight out Marxist and becomes a hideous blot in human history, resulting in eventual blowback. And in all three of these cases, MGTOW terminates. However, the original manifesto, requiring constant vigilance in keeping men masculine, keeping women in their place, and preventing the size creep of government, well, that is eternal. As long as there are humans, there will be a need for this. And I cannot comprehend why men in this space would want to put an expiration date on MGTOW. And the proposed solution for a population fix, that is, replacing women, has not seen a rigorous study of all the ways it could go wrong. Further, this is playing with something at a biological level instead of an ideological one. This means if it goes sideways, it may not unwind like bad ideologies have in the past, and we could be permanently stuck with the results. Agitating for change without regard for the long-term ramifications is Marxist. My problem with devices such as the artificial womb is not that they exist, but that we're making wide claims that they're the solution without any analysis on all the ways it could go wrong. We're only focusing on the ways in which we imagine it going right. And I have performed some thought experiments on my end covering ways in which it might go wrong. I will share some of them here, but this is not meant to be definitive. For one thing, we know that men compete over women, and we know that free market competition drives civilizations forward. Therefore, it is not at all difficult to imagine a civilization where all advancement halts due to a lack of women to compete over. Now, men here listening will say, well, that doesn't sound like MGTOW competing over women. And my response to you is to ask what makes you believe that only self-actualized MGTOW would be using these devices. In fact, even many MGTOW and men admit being stuck in the so-called void and never actually reaching self-actualization because they feel purposeless without women to pursue. And these are the honest ones that are actually self-analyzing. Are we to make the claim that all men will be self-reflective, and all men will embrace MGTOW, and all men will try to self-actualize? Further, in the void left by women, it would not be difficult to imagine half the male population automatically moving to fill that void, trying to raise children under two parents, of course, where one man is the masculine and one man is the feminine. In fact, it's very easy to imagine an acceleration of the homosexual rate and an acceleration of things like the LGBTQ as a result of embracing devices such as this. And the sharp, jagged point that should be made here is that the use of these devices in the wild is unlikely to match what we imagine them being used for in MGTOW circles. And if one stretches, it's possible to imagine an uncompetitive, essentially all-male matriarchy, where the masculine men are disinterested in competing on a global stage, and the feminine men are, well, essentially feminine. And the weirdness of society could in fact be amplified. And my estimate would be that an outside civilization doing it the more traditional way would be in position to crush this weaker civilization, because the more traditional civilization is not preoccupied with utopian pipe dreams. Now, having some concerns that I might have been redefining things or putting things where they ought not to be, I actually sent some of my prior content to Solaris to essentially see if he would shake his fists at me for bastardizing MGTOW, and I do not think it will be considered a breach of trust if I include the summary of his response in this video. The videos I'm speaking of are ones where I state that the position of women is to play an auxiliary support position for men, and that men shouldn't just go blindly sabering every single woman simply because she was born female. And he stated, in essence, that he agreed. And the short definition of the standard of behavior we expect from women is one of grace. And the only time they're worthy of a sabering is when they move out of this auxiliary position. Or even worse, create headwind by getting in the way of men and creating efficiency problems. So you will not see me interfering with MGTOWs who are roasting women who deserve it, because shunning bad female behavior is critically important. But when the definition shifts to becoming defined by women or the absence of, or Marxist Marxian ideas are left to run unchecked, you can bet that I will be sticking my blade in and turning it. And just to qualify that, the problem with letting Marxian ideas run unchecked is that somewhere, at some point, violence is likely to break out. And if the seeds we've been planting up to that point are Marxist or Marxian in nature, then they will transform into Marxist or Marxian violence, which always suffers blowback in unpredictable ways. Some men shy away when I talk about the subject of violence because they don't want to be seen as advocating for it. However, we all know that men will only take so much, and I consider it intellectually dishonest when we pretend that we don't know that Marxian seeds planted now will turn into Marxian violence later. And always remember, if you're forced into a position where you have to use violence, it should be a principled and narrow response. Even if you're tempted to turn Marxist in favor of class warfare because of vengeance or whatever, that will have blowback in ways that you cannot predict. The consequences of Marxism are always bad, and you should always err toward principled and narrow because of the historical precedent in regard to this. So, for the people who are going to push back on everything I just said, my challenge to you is this. Demonstrate that the original manifesto is out of line with precedent, or that later ideas and the scope narrowing are in line with precedent. For the older MGTOWs here who remember it happening differently, I would tell you that remembering something as happening a certain way is not an argument in either direction and amounts to lazy dismissal without rigor. Adherence to something should be guided by precedent alone, and not your memory or opinion. I have heard that the current state of MGTOW is an evolution, but if I am to use precedent as a measuring stick and consider all the secondary problems which emerged as a result of the departure from principles which are backed by precedent, it would appear that this so-called evolution is much closer to entropy. And now, to the men who will be spellcasting in my general direction, you cannot claim that I'm egalitarian because I have a default bias against inclusion of women for efficiency purposes. You cannot claim that I'm Marxist because those efficiency arguments can be overcome in certain domains and contexts. You cannot claim that I'm white knighting, as I will let my own feminist family members starve. And you cannot claim that I'm moving the definition of MGTOW around because I'm adhering to the original manifesto and went as far as to check in with one of the original founders. In summary, what men are instinctively worried about can be folded into objective efficiency arguments. No dogma, Marxism, or subjectivity required. This would work for rejecting large parts of the Declaration of Sentiments, as well as it dramatically simplifies things such as MGTOW Mir inclusion. In the case of the MGTOW Mir, there are over 500 authors at the present moment, and 4 of the authors are female. And the efficiency arguments here are very clear and simple. Mir inclusion is not a synonym with marriage. There is no short-term or long-term financial risk, no opportunity cost, so negative efficiency is very close to zero, and these specific 4 have a long history of consistently plucking the eyes out of feminism. This non-volatility in our space does not undercut efficiency, so negative efficiency is still zero, or very close to it, and the positive efficiency of creating an awkward problem for feminism where it cannot wave these women away, using a Marxist argument such as, you're just a man, so what do you know, further adds positive efficiency to the thrust of the message. Thus, the decision is very clear, using concrete, objective reasoning. And when this is added together with the aforementioned precedent in this video, it equals checkmate. But I do want to give credit where credit is due. The current community does really have the shun women part of this down, which is not something I thought I would see from men in my lifetime. And I find it both interesting and beautiful that I can ward off both Marxism and egalitarianism using efficiency arguments. I can have a default bias as an extension of biology, which prevents me from becoming egalitarian, and because the efficiency argument is not insurmountable, that prevents me from becoming a Marxist, no emotions necessary. And likewise, many of the men here will still be able to make concrete arguments against marriage and dating using simple objective efficiency arguments. No feels required. And with that, gentlemen, I am concluding this video, and I may need to take a break after this one.